And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Beautiful day here in Middle Tennessee as we are out here live in Gladeville, Tennessee at the Nashville Super Speedway, high atop in the press box, floor 6. And we are looking out over everything, the track, the Ally 400, the first cup race here in this market since 1984. The trucks are tonight, Xfinity race tomorrow afternoon, cup race Sunday afternoon. So we are looking forward to a big race weekend here in Middle Tennessee, or in particular out here in Gladeville. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe here on site. Willie D is joining us for the first hour. And then he's off to what, a baseball tournament? Mahoney's baseball tournament.
I'm going to Indiana.
Indy. Whereabouts in Indy?
It's close to Indianapolis. It's the closest town that you might have heard of is Carmel, Indiana.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
It's it's this massive complex. We talked about it some last year. Let me fix my Zoom here. It's a complex built just for tournaments like this. We've talked about these before. They just try to host as many of these as they can. I don't know how many fields you can get lost in the complex. Let's look at it that way. Don't go to the wrong field. It's easy to do that. It's got all sizes of fields, a lot of turf. There's some dirt fields. It's first class. It's a town called Westgate, which is right next to Carmel. But you drive past downtown Indianapolis to get there, and it's a good time.
Oh yeah, my aunt and uncle are back in the day.
We're playing the Pirates and the Cubs, I think, tonight.
Okay.
There's a team from Chicago and a team from Pittsburgh that we're playing tonight.
Well, hopefully, when you play the Pirates and you hit the ball to third and he pulls your first baseman off, hopefully he'll chase your batter all the way home and then throw home. Your guy from third will slide in safe. Then they'll throw to first. It'll go past the first baseman. Your runner then will advance to second. So hopefully that play will happen when you play the Pirates.
We'll take it. We'll take it if that's the case.
I see what you did there.
You see what I did there?
Yeah, that was good.
In fact, that was the Pirates and the Cubs, ironically.
Yeah. Yeah. That was
This area, Willie, has changed a bit since the last time we were out here.
Tell me about that. I can see Chase in the... wherever he is on the complex here, but I'm trying to get a visual.
I
see Darren's arm.
Yeah, we haven't set up the big camera yet because a lot of things.
So what? Because I've always wondered in all these years. I mean, how many years has it been since they've had
a decade?
In 10 years, what have they done to the place?
Well, there's this gigantic. Is that an industrial park out there? I'm not completely sure what all that is. I mean, there's just building after building after building after building, and I would assume that is a big industrial park. Chase, help me if I'm wrong here.
No,
but that's
is.
What it looks like. That was nothing but land the last time we were here. We were just staring at trees and grass, and now it's a humongous industrial park. As we sit here, you know where the press box is. You're looking, we're looking straight ahead at, you know, where they're going to wave the flag and get the race started. Then there's the big tower in the middle.
Right.
But then out past all that is all industrial buildings. Like I said, it was all trees and land the last time we were here. So that is a different part. The whole entrance coming in was completely different. That's not how there was. That entrance did not exist back whenever racing here. Right.
That was just...
that road we came down was a field. So
So that's all and obviously, I mean, that's all been going on. They've been building that, and they're building even more, but it is certainly developed, and I'm gonna do the honors of saying this, since this is my job all weekend. For the first time in over a decade, there are race trucks on the track.
They are coming out of the
Pit?
Of the garages.
Yeah.
And now they're in the pits. And it looks like these trucks are about to start going around the track. So,
it's going to be a practice. So it'll be cool to see them and hear them, because you know we're going to hear them here shortly. But I can hear those motors revving as they head off onto the service road and then come off on the backstretch.
Willie, I will tell you, the drive around, because when you come in the back way, to get your credentials, and then you have to basically drive all the way around. You get a good view of what's going on out there. There are already a ton, and I mean a ton of people here set up. Campers galore, you know, exactly what you expect to see at a NASCAR event. By the way, as these trucks go around, hopefully you'll be able to pick up that sound.
Maybe through the broadcast
as the trucks start doing laps. But there are campers galore, people set up out there in the RV lots, and it's a sight to see. It is a welcome sight to see this again here in our market, and I can only imagine what it'll look like by the time the Cup race starts on Sunday.
Well, I'm sure the excitement is there, being able to see the trucks out on the track, but I guess that can only mean one thing, Darren. You will not be able to take any practice laps on the track today.
No, if I did, I would get in big trouble. I would not be welcome Sunday. I can tell you that.
No. Too many people around.
And quite honestly, I love my Dodge Durango with the Hemi and the V8, but I can't hang.
I bet that thing could buck on the backstretch.
I know, but I can't hang with these trucks.
You do. The only thing I'd be worried about are the tires, but you could probably hit 120 to back it down.
I'm sure I could hit
going 120. Into three. But yeah, it's a welcome sight and sound.
I can hear
to
it.
Hear so. Because I'm like now it's kind of all setting in what I'm about to do this weekend.
Yeah.
But it's we did a little kind of a walkthrough yesterday. So Joe Williams,
I was gonna say, Willie, you know who the first person I ran into at the track? Joe Williams.
Yep. Joe Williams, longtime voice of the Super Speedway, who I will be
it's good
working
to see
with tonight.
Joe. Yep, good to see Joe. Been a long time.
Outstanding. I'm sure he's looking forward to this. I mean, wow. You think about the history coming back, not only of this track, but also, like you guys said at the top of the show, first Cup race since 84. That's unbelievable. And I know a lot of people are really still bitter that they lost the rotation for so long in a town like Nashville that has always loved racing. But here we go. I mean, we got a new beginning now.
Over 35 years. So can you hear the trucks?
Oh, yeah.
Is it bleeding through?
It is. Just a little bit. Okay. It's not interrupting the broadcast, but you can hear it faintly in the background. I love it.
Awesome.
Yeah, so just some people to point out in this race tonight. You'll have Josh Berry, who's going to be attempting to qualify. Josh Berry is a regular in the Xfinity Series, which when you guys were out here was known as the Busch Series or the Nationwide Series. Josh Berry is from Hendersonville, Tennessee, and he's done a really good job driving for Junior Motorsports in the Xfinity side. He got a win earlier this year in Martinsville, so he's the hometown boy, and will be piloting the number 25 Rackley Roofing Chevy tonight, and then the number 8 iRacing Chevy tomorrow in the Xfinity Series. He's not racing on Sunday, but got to see him make his Cup debut at Dover a few weeks ago, about a month ago. So he's somebody to watch because I think he's got a chance to win one of these two races tonight or tomorrow.
There's a kid, Chad Fincham. Is that right? He's Fincham, racing Xfinity and Cup. He is from Knoxville.
Yep. Yep. So he's a Knoxville guy. And then you got the 17, which is Ryan Preece, who's a Cup regular. Hunt Brothers is on that, of course, a Nashville company. So a lot of flavor from the area that'll be represented this weekend.
And don't say anything, Chase. I know you know the answer to this. Willie, do you know who is going to be waving the flag for the first Cup race in this market in 36 years on Sunday afternoon? Any idea who's going to be waving that flag?
I could give you a very sarcastic, fun answer.
Okay, let's do that. Let's start there.
Well, apparently you can't.
I was thinking people like Eddie George, Jeff Fisher, like people. I feel like these guys have done that before.
You're on the right path.
Okay.
I mean, you're on the track.
Those were not sarcastic answers.
You're not in the wall. You're on the track.
How
we've had him on the show many times.
Mike Vrabel?
No.
Once again, you're all over it. By the way, this guy.
We haven't had him on many times.
This guy played against Mike Vrabel.
Played against Mike Vrabel.
I will give you one hint.
Did he not? When he was in Kansas City, they played the Patriots. That Mike Vrabel was on that team. A very big play happened. It's not a good one, but it was a very big play.
So it's a former Patriot.
No, it's a former Chief.
Oh, okay. Former Chief, former Titan. Who played against Vrabel.
Just think about some of the conversations we've had with him of late on
Actually, I think he was teammates with Mike Vrabel then, because I think Vrabel was with the Chiefs.
Yeah. Really? Okay. So he's either played against Mike Vrabel or with Mike Vrabel.
Mm-hmm. Tom Brady's probably not sending him a Christmas card.
His initials are BP.
You still don't have this.
Okay. Bernard Pollard.
Bernard Pollard. Oh, why didn't I get... I should have gotten that. My fault. The whole renaissance, he's last year talking about how he's gained interest in the sport.
Yeah, doing the iRacing.
Good call.
So Bernard Pollard will be waving the flag. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. He's doing a lot with Ally. And so why he is doing this. And he was a part of a deal with Dale Jr. and Jeff Gordon where they both designed the 48 of Alex Bowman, the Ally car, and fans voted on which design they were going to go with. Dale Jr. won, obviously, as you would imagine. The neon, it's the Nashville neon look. So that's going to be cool. And also, the 99, the Trackhouse racing car, which is owned by Justin Marks, who lives in Nashville now, and Pitbull, Daniel Suarez, is going to be the Tootsie's car.
Yeah. I saw Daniel Suarez. I physically see him, but I saw that he was downtown with the Tootsie's car last night on Broadway. Barrett Salee tweeting out there in the last hour, college football playoff will hold a teleconference today. It'll be at noon hour time regarding, the future of college football playoffs. Wonder where that's going.
So they're going to be... So you say teleconference, meaning they're going to talk to each other, or that's like a press conference?
No, teleconference. I think it's to talk to each other. That is, remember,
okay, what are we
going to
do?
They know what they're going to do. They're going. That's the start of, okay, everybody raise their hand in favor. Okay, it's passed. And then, remember, there has to be, who are we talking to? It has to be, was it Paul Feinbaum? He's got to be rubber stamped a couple more times, and then, it's going to happen. And so, speaking of that, it's a perfect segue to say on the other side, we'll talk to Scott Ramsey and we'll get his reaction. What does this mean? Because it looks like all signs are pointing towards a 12-team college football playoff system. So we'll talk to Scott on the other side as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase here on this gorgeous Friday morning here in Middle Tennessee, Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe. Alongside, as we sit here live at the Nashville Super Speedway out here in Gladeville, of course, the trucks are going around the track. Cup race on Sunday afternoon, first cup race in this area in 36 years. Willie Donick is also with us today. He'll be heading to Indiana in just a bit. We are now joined, and I need to be more professional. I always call him the Big Cheese. He is. But I need to give a little bit more formal introduction with the Nashville Sports Council. He's the president and CEO. He's Scott Ramsey. He now joins us on the program. Scott, how the heck are you?
I'm good, Darren. How are you? I've never really taken offense to the Big Cheese, but I've always tried to kind of maintain to be, somewhat more of a healthy Big Cheese during the month.
That is a good point. You're right. Nobody should be really offended by calling a Big Cheese, but I like where you went with that. That's good. My son loves cheese. If I consumed as much cheese as him, he's 9. Well, I'll just leave it at that. I think we all know what that means. How's your summer going?
Yeah, it was good. We're actually on family vacation. I hate missing the cup race, but we've got four kids and a brand new little grandbaby that's 10 months old, and we had this planned for quite a while, and hate missing the race out there. I know Eric and everybody's worked hard on just, you know, pulling the super speedway back together, but unfortunately we had this one planned, so I'm going to have to root from afar for everything to go well this weekend for them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We'll have fun with that. I know you guys will. So there's supposed to be a teleconference today at noon our time, Scott, and they're supposed to talk about the future of the college football playoffs. There's a lot of speculation out there that this thing is headed toward a 12-team college football playoff format. And if it passes, and I think it's got to get rubber stamped, as Paul Feinbaum told us a couple of days ago, rubber stamped a couple more times and away they go.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people writing about, you know, what does this mean? How is this going to affect everything else? So who better than you to talk about it? Because I know you've obviously been privy to stuff. You've been talking to people. Is this a good thing for you? Does this concern you? Kind of where are you if this indeed is where college football is headed in a couple of years?
Well, as we talked today, Darren, I think it's a mixed bag of excitement and concern. And I say that today because we're not really sure of a lot of the specifics that would really play into how it's going to directly impact the Music City Bowl and where we've been going with our game. And hopefully we were headed toward, you know, trying to get into that really elite package of cities and destinations for postseason college football. So, you know, I think there's a lot of details still to kind of be ironed out and to be answered. And right now I'm not aware of those being very definitive. And some of those are about timing. So, for example, when will this go into effect? You know, there's rumors it could go into effect in 2 or 3 years. If that happens, we're still in the middle of a contract cycle with the SEC, the Big Ten, our new title sponsor, TransPerfect, ESPN, and you know, all of our kind of plans have been built around this 6-year deal that we put together a couple years ago, and we're in year two of that. And you know, how will that impact us, you know, going forward over the next few years through team selection, matchups, TV time slots, just general interest from fans. You know, I think the 12 team will even garner more of the focus on the teams, the players, and the fans, and you know, everything, than more so than even the 4 teams. So, you know, how will that impact? That's going to be a little bit of a guess, but I think we're going to have to factor that in. You know, or they could make a decision, which has been talked about, that hey, we've got too many contracts to undo here between, you know, not only destinations and bowl games, but conferences and teams and financial payouts and TV contracts. We could wait to the end of the contract cycle, which that's the time where we had kind of aligned, and it looked like it was aligning for some of our Nissan Stadium renovations. And we were really going to try to kind of get into that national championship kind of discussion. And, you know, the East Bank renovations will be undergoing. Certainly, downtown growth. We've shown that we can host events better than anybody in the country. And certainly, Open Air Stadium has been, you know, a little bit of holding us back in the middle of January for, you know, Mid-South. So hopefully with the new stadium renovations and maybe moving it around the country, we could get in that conversation. But, you know, so it's more the timing and alignment. Certainly, our track was to kind of get into that national championship and semi and quarterfinals discussion with the current New Year's Six Bowls. But, you know, if that happens too soon before stadium's ready, how does that impact it? We just don't know yet.
You have a very good relationship with Greg Sankey. You talk to him a lot. He seemed to be the one pushing this thing to why we're having this discussion. I just want to know your initial reaction when this basically started getting out there, or at least when you heard it. I mean, you probably heard all this stuff well before us when it was out there for public consumption. But I've admitted, Scott, you know, I thought, you know, the next phase was 6 or 8 and somehow we've blown way past 6 and 8. We've skipped some steps, and it's like straight to 12. And Greg Sankey seems to be the one, you know, out, up front, standing up and presenting that to the committee. Are you surprised that it seems like we've blown through some steps and we're talking about going from 4 to 12?
Well, I think when you just think about the numbers, Darren, you would certainly say, wow, that seems to be a big jump, especially for college football that has a collection of, you know, independent conferences and teams trying to make a unified decision, which has always been what's taken a long time to make decisions. But on the other hand, you start thinking about, you know, the difference between 6 and 8 and 12, you know, has been documented. A, it opens up more opportunities for the power leagues like the SEC to have multiple teams in, 3, 4, maybe there's a year where they could get 5 in based on the rankings. And it also, you know, solves the question for the group of 5 of, maybe 1, maybe 2 in, and, kind of opens up that process. Now, again, that adds a layer of questions from my standpoint of trying to see where Nashville fits in. Are they going to kind of dig in and play that throughout the entire month of December, you know, 3 or 4 weeks in a row, which has always been a challenge in scheduling some of these games? So are you going to play, you know, that first round on campus? Well, if so, boy, that's a tough job for the committee to start ranking, you know, who's 8 and who's 9, who gets the home game and who doesn't, especially if you're talking about weather in December. Secondly, you know, would those consider coming to neutral sites? And then lastly, if you go to the quarter and the semis, when are you going to play those? You're going to play those right before, right after Christmas? You're going to collect New Year's Day? So I think there's a lot of things, the numbers and what they propose. I guess I was a little surprised about how quickly that had come out, coming out of COVID and let everybody kind of get their arms around a year of recovery and normalcy, and knowing we had 5 years left in deals that, you know, are system-wide. And, I was a little surprised on that. But, again, I think it'll take them time to figure out all those details of scheduling, timing, process, locations, and hopefully we'll find a place for Nashville if you continue to kind of play and move up in the process, which is certainly our goal.
Scott Ramsey is with us. We're trying to look on the horizon on this 12-team college football playoff proposal and what it means for Nashville. So, Scott, this was a question I think Ross Bjork asked on Paul Feinbaum's show, and that would be, if the first round is on home sites, which has been proposed, could the loser of those first games be eligible to play in a bowl game? And I would think the Music City Bowl might be in that mix. You were just trying to get a feel for the calendar, which we don't know. But, you know, that that's an interesting question, because that would certainly affect who you could invite and, you know, what you think the market would be in a situation like that, a playoff team that goes down in the first round.
Yeah, that's a logistical question that's, boy, you got to sit down and really put some pen to paper on, Willie, here's why. So let's say there's two SEC teams that play and lose, or Big Ten, because we're SEC Big Ten, into that first round, and which is maybe, what, second week of December.
Okay.
And do you hold up the entire bowl selection or assignment process, whichever way it's going to go, until mid-December, knowing that Texas A&M or Wisconsin or Penn State may be available to play? And if so, and they played on the road, are there players and organization wanting to travel to Tampa, Nashville, Houston, you know, Orlando, or something like that to play another game, you know, in 2 weeks? Because I think also one of the things I think it's interesting timing here is the NIL legislation.
Right.
So once you start getting into 15, 16, 17 games, we've already seen players and even teams last year opt out of going to the postseason. You know, I referenced the Florida situation. They were playing Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl. And, you know, I don't know how many starters. You guys probably know that exact number. But, I mean, I'm thinking multiple starters just kind of said no thanks. Now, that could have been COVID. you know, fatigue from going through the year, but you feel like that's more of a trend going. So are they going to want to play and lose in the playoffs and then come to a bowl game, and will fans have interest to make it a worthwhile tourism investment for a city like Nashville? It may not. I think it's just going to have to take a lot more discussion and thought as we move through the process.
Really interesting thoughts. And, you know, on the other hand, if this is not an option, the losing team of the first round, who, you know, otherwise maybe doesn't get a bowl game, right? They made the playoffs,
yeah,
but they actually
right.
don't get a trip, that kind of thing. They played either a home or a road game. Are there enough
right.
teams left over to fill out? I think you guys are certainly high enough yeah. on the chain that you would have teams, but it would certainly affect the matchups, wouldn't it? Now
yeah,
with 12 instead of 4.
I think the you know, intangible question, Willie, too, is it will you be able to maintain the interest in the trip to Nashville? I mean, you know, a Wisconsin-Auburn game this year would be, you know, one thing. Wisconsin-Auburn, if they just were ranked 14th, 15th, and just missed the top 12 in a playoff game, will that continue to wane? And will fans kind of then have more I mean, hey, we've made no bones about it. We started this game to really build the business and the tourism and the excitement between Christmas and New Year's when we built the stadium 25 years ago. You know, the bowl game has been a huge, you know, business and economic, you know, catalyst for building that week. Certainly we have the New Year's Eve concert now and general tourism, but the bowl has brought, you know, significant amount of people, revenue, and exposure to the city during what used to be a dead time. So I think we go back to our core mission of, hey, we want to bring people to the city, fill up the city, fill up the stadium, and, you know, put as many eyeballs in our city as possible. So will we be able to maintain that and raise the necessary revenue to kind of work out the financial deal with the conferences, which could change as well. So I think there's a lot of things that kind of really, you know, sit back and really kind of put some thought to on our ability to maintain a high profile and growing event rather than a stagnant event. And if so, then how do we do that effectively? I'm not sure yet until we know some more details.
And I'm sure Greg Sankey has to be thinking about all those things as he moves forward with this, if he's on board, which he seems like he is. One more for you, Scott, before I pass it to Chase. You were talking earlier about you've already had the vision of wanting to upgrade to a point where you get in the mix for a big game, a playoff game. And we were thinking out loud. We had this discussion just batting it around. It's one of the ideas we had to call you and just see what you thought.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, with quarterfinal games and maybe someday they decide, you know, the first round needs to be on neutral sites. Could you envision
right.
Nashville in a rotation of playoff games? We know it's an outdoor venue, but, of course, we were saying if you're going to play on-site, you could have home games in Michigan and home games in, you know, Penn State. You know, there's a lot of teams that could
yeah.
be hosting well north of Nashville.
Absolutely, Willie. I you know, again, that's where, in the perfect world for us, it would have been to kind of play out this contract cycle, because I really think that would align with the timeline of the renovations of Nissan Stadium. And I don't think any of us, at least I know you guys on the call, are going to question our ability to be able to host this event as good as any city in the country should we be able to host a national championship game. The question is, you start looking at the actual venue, do you want to play it in the Mid-South? Well, you're certainly now going to start playing playoff games in questionable weather, because it's going to be based on record. So is that going to get thrown out a little bit? And then we can compete. We can compete with the cities. You know, the Mercedes-Benz Dome and, you know, certainly the Cowboys Stadium. And there's some facilities now that are enclosed that are, you know, weatherproof, if you will, for the actual game that make it difficult. And so that's why I was excited about kind of the timeline of Nissan. But I certainly think we're going to kind of push the envelope as far as we can once we have a better definition of kind of who and where they would like to play the games.
Very,
you know, I think the other question, Willie, you brought up about Sankey is one of the things I think is going to be interesting too is I think as the conferences talk about all their teams, if you start really pushing back and devaluing the bowl system, then are you really really cutting out a lot of your conference that tried to kind of build up through the bowls to be become, you know, maybe a chance to play in the playoffs. Because, you know, they've got to figure out a system that maximizes the postseason for their entire conference membership. You know, not just maybe two of the elite teams that typically there. So that's a little bit of a quandary as well. How do you maintain some level of importance and scheduling and excitement around postseason as a whole for your conference, not just, you know, your two or three elite teams typically every year?
Scott Ramsey is with us from the Nashville Sports Council. And Scott, you know, looking at other things too, you know, a few years ago, I can remember being at Nissan Stadium as Tennessee played in opening their season at a neutral site game. How much has that been looked at of trying to get more of those? Ole Miss, Vanderbilt played there, mm-hmm. getting more of those neutral site games on the schedule?
You know, Chase, that's probably one of the most common questions I've had over the years, and there's really a two-part answer to it. One, we really haven't played in that area for a financial reason to this date. I mean, looking at $5 million team guarantees, so you're at $10 million, you know, right out of the gate in your regular season, so you have very limited revenue streams. So you need television and some sort of benefactor to kind of fund those games. Certainly Chick-fil-A and AT&T and some of those places have done it pretty successfully to have a Labor Day kickoff event. So the financial risk on that one, we have felt like we've been better utilizing our money for some of the special events in our city that we funded, NHL All-Star Game, and NFL Draft, our bowl game, the SEC basketball tournament, things like that. So financially, it's kind of been holding us back a little bit about the price to kind of get, you know, the top level teams in here. We have certainly tried to pursue that right regular season game, and you referenced the Tennessee game, when maybe there's been an 8 or 9 game home regular season of some teams regionally that have fit in here. We've done quite well with that, 40, 50,000, and occasionally a Tennessee sellout. So we've been active. We just haven't been active at the top level. Now, with the change in this, you know, I think what you're going to see is, and what you've seen the trend now shift to, is a lot of the big time matchups are going back to home and home because, you know, the ADs now need to keep, you know, that big name on your calendar, non-conference, to pacify your season ticket holders, your suite holders, your sponsors. And rather than have that game on a neutral site, you can bring it to the campus. And that really helps your season ticket package for that season. So, you know, I think you're going to continue to see the trend of have those games kind of pull back more on campus. But we're going to explore every opportunity if we feel like, you know, the new system will open up those chances for us.
So obviously, you hear the trucks in the background. We open this by talking about the mm-hmm. race this weekend out here at the Nashville Super Speedway. There's still a lot of movement with the fairgrounds and what could happen with that race facility, with the folks from Bristol Motor Speedway being involved in that. How special is it, though, to see how much NASCAR wants to be in this city, whether it's a race out at this place, at the fairgrounds, and also having the year-end banquet like they did a couple years ago?
I think it's exciting, Chase. I think one of the things in the last 4 or 5 years that we've all enjoyed, I think, has been the reputation of Nashville as a site for a major sporting event, whether it be NASCAR, whether it be the NFL, NHL, certainly IndyCars coming with a new Grand Prix this summer have been trying. So I think NASCAR kind of has underscored the interest in Nashville nationally for, you know, sports and major sporting events as a destination. I think we've worked hard over the last 20 years as a city to really create that reputation, and hopefully over the next few years, racing will be one of the old but new additions to the annual calendar.
Yeah, and you know, it's obviously a sport that's near and dear to my heart. Do you feel, and I don't know, I guess all your involvement, do you feel like we're close to something with the fairgrounds and getting a little bit of a resolution?
I'll be honest, Chase, I have not really been in those discussion. I think it's certainly in the Metro fairgrounds, hands right now. And, I think certainly if things move forward and progress, we'll stand ready as a sports council to help wherever they need our assistance, whether with an event, special event, or anything down that road, which has been very consistent with us. That's kind of the role we've played with soccer, certainly the role we're playing with the Grand Prix. We've talked to Eric Moses as he's come in from Dover, and they wanted to get this inaugural year done, but we've had some good conversations, and we may have a role with him down the road. So, I think as we continue to build our calendar out, the role the Sports Council plays is always a little bit different for every event, and we certainly would enjoy having a role with a NASCAR event at the fairgrounds as well as we would out at Super Speedway as well.
Scott, really appreciate your time. Have a great vacation with your family, and we look forward to talking to you here real soon.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on. Have a good weekend.
All right, that is Scott Ramsey. He is the president and CEO of the Nashville Sports Council, and a good conversation there with him. We'll come back and continue that on the other side as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick here with you. Chase McCabe, Darren McFarland are out at the Super Speedway in Gladeville. Big, big weekend of racing coming up. They'll be back with us in just a moment. Some really interesting things from Scott Ramsey there, and we certainly thank him for taking time out of his vacation to join us for some perspective on what he saw in the vision of this 12-team proposal that is on warp speed, it seems like. And I can't help but think he was a little bit surprised. His tone was a little bit of, wow, this was fast. It's thrown out there. It sounded like he knew this was maybe brewing, but it seems like it's on the fast track, and he raised a lot of really good questions on how to do this right. And I hear trucks zooming in the background, so I think we've got Chase and Darren ready to go here. But
we're here.
Guys, is it fair to say, do you think he was a little surprised at the speed of this and how quickly it was released and seems to be in the forefront?
I felt that way. I mean, I felt like it was, I think, isn't that the reaction of all of us, though, that it's moved as quickly as it has? And, now we're sitting here talking about a conference call about the future. And like, Darren, you brought it up that you thought, okay, well, maybe it would go to 6 and or 8, but it goes 4 to 12, like, boom. And that's where we're at.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how anybody couldn't be a little bit surprised, if not a lot surprised, at the quickness of this. Although there was stuff circulating out there yesterday that this stuff has kind of been secretly going on behind the scenes for a good while, like meetings at private places and off the beat, like old school stuff, meeting off the beaten path, off the grid. I saw that stuff out there, floating out there yesterday, that this stuff has been in the works for possibly like the last couple of years with like private meetings and off the grid stuff. So, that doesn't mean that it still shouldn't be a surprise to everyone, because if it's off the grid and it's private, nobody would know other than a select few. So, yeah, I mean, it. And by the way, if you remember our conversation with Paul Feinbaum a couple of days ago, he did say another part of this is, the product, I don't want to say it's stale because we're in SEC country. It's not stale here, but when you're trying to get the audience of the entire country and it's the same teams over and over and over and over again, sure, if you're a fan of Alabama, if you're a fan of Clemson, if you're a fan of Ohio State, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, I mean, we can all name the teams,
yeah,
Georgia,
it's working great.
The teams on our hands, it's the usual LSU, the usual suspects. Outside of that, they have nothing to root for, right? And so when I say stale, it, in other words, the same teams keep showing up to the party. if you're throwing parties all the time and the same people keep showing up, your party is going to be viewed as stale, right? It's like, why would I go to your party? It's the same people every time I go there.
The rest of the people are saying, I don't care about your party, right? You're trying to be more inclusive and bring more people. That's why I think the 12 teams, you got everybody on board, right? You got the Power Five. You've got the group of five. They're all saying, okay, we got a spot in this party, right? Right. So, some of the leagues that have been squeezed from the party a bunch of times, like the Pac-12, they've got a better shot here. But the issue that Scott raised that I think was a big one, and Paul kind of scoffed at it, he kind of blew it off and said, you know, contracts were made to be broken, we'll get out of this. But Scott did seem to think, you know, you got a pretty system, the term he used was system-wide. Like, everybody has contracts, not just the Rose Bowl, but everybody has got this cycle, right, which lasts for another, 4 or 5 years. So can you get out of that many contracts that quick, or do you think this is better off, you know, just being put back a little further? You get the feeling that there's some people at the top saying, we can't have another 4 or 5 years of the same teams getting there every year. This is not going to be successful. I can see both sides, but they got a lot of paperwork to do.
Yeah, let me, I just want to, I'm asking this question not in the, this is my opinion, I'm just asking it if we feel like it's going this direction. I mean, obviously, you know, talking to Scott, we know what the Music City Bowl has done for this city. We know what a lot of the bowl games that aren't considered your top tier have done for other cities, you know, whether it's Mobile or smaller stadiums in Texas, things like that. But does it kind of feel like that college football, that the major conferences are kind of recognizing the things that we always joke about of there are too many bowl games and too many, you know, participation trophies, I guess, and wanting to make the playoff mean even more, even though, like we've also said, you're not going to have, you know, some of these teams that are playing in these bowl games even sniff the playoff. So it's kind of a catch-22.
I think it is a great catch-22, and that was another thing that Scott brought up that caught my attention. He said, you know, Greg Sankey and all the commissioners, really, they have to be thinking not only from the top, what's the best playoff we can have and what serves the league's best at the top, but how do you preserve the best thing for the rest of the teams in your league? Because there are plenty of programs that it's an accomplishment to make one of those bowl games. Even if it's a lowly bowl, it's a bowl. You know, that coach that's trying to keep his job, you know, if you go to 3 straight bowl games or if you miss 3 straight years going to a bowl game, that affects your resume a lot, even if you never make the playoffs. So I think I heard some trepidation from Scott, kind of like, well, if we can upgrade and we've got a great city here, if we can get in the rotation of having a playoff game every few years, I think we'll be fine. But if you're relegated to the leftovers, you know, if you think about it, if 3 teams from the SEC on average go to this thing, what that it does to the Music City Bowl, you're trying to look for teams probably some years, right? 6-win, 7-win teams. It's not a great matchup. It's not thriving for what the bowl game is meant to be in this city, right? It kind of moves down the food chain a little bit. But if you can get in that rotation, then all of a sudden this thing becomes better than it's ever been before.
Unless it turns out that, you know, Tennessee is kind of mid-range and Tennessee remain like it's almost Tennessee every year, then that would help. But, you know, if you're Tennessee, obviously that's not what you want.
You're talking about Tennessee and the Music City Bowl?
Yeah. I mean, if they're – but you're right, Willie. I mean, because you're going to be plucking from bowls that maybe are higher on the food chain than the Music City Bowl. So whereas a 8-9 win team could come here, now they're going to go somewhere else because you're going to have teams that usually would be playing in those bowls going to the playoff.
Well, he you could hear his concern on the trend that's already happening, the opt-outs for the pro prospects. You know, those they'll be more focus on the live playoffs, less focus on bowl games probably played in between. And can you make it work? Is it worthwhile? I do think there will be just naturally some bowls that get lopped off that just say, you know what, we can't make it work.
Well, I feel bad for Scott Ramsey and his crew that have worked very, very hard in this market for decades and done a lot of great things for this market in decades when this wasn't the popular landing spot. You know, it's a lot easier today. Well, it's real easy today. You say Nashville and they go, yes.
Right.
And you say, well, I haven't even said anything but Nashville. And they're like, yes. And it wasn't always that case. I know because, Willie, we've been privy to private meetings. We know things that were going on behind the scenes, people that were lobbying for certain events here. And they're like, yeah, but you need this. Yeah, we like Nashville, but you need that to happen. You need a new convention center or you need this. We'd love to, but you don't get the buts anymore. It's like, hey, we're Nashville. Yes, that's what you get today. But, you know, they put in a lot of hard work. And I would hate for a lot of that hard work building that bowl to what it is today and the money that's generated for this city for decades to be irrelevant or to go away. Because until the city puts real pressure, until the city figures out that they, you know, there needs to be real pressure applied to the Titans for a new stadium so we can end this discussion. And all these great events can continue coming, and the answer can continue being, hey, we're Nashville. Yes. Well, yeah. We're interested.
And it did not sound to me he was optimistic about that. Whatever these renovations are that he's talking about, they don't include a roof, right? I think it will improve the venue. That will be nice, but the outdoor thing is going to be something that hampers their chances of getting in that rotation, even though I'm not writing it off. You seem to think there's no chance. I think there's a chance. But it sounds to me like I heard a lot of, in his voice, Scott Ramsey saying, let's take our time on this. I need a little bit of time to try to sort out our strategy here. Let's not rush this thing. And I would imagine there's a lot of heads of a lot of bowl games that feel the same way. The question is, do they have enough pull with these commissioners and the people that are trying to make this happen to do that? Or is this thing going to be on the fast track and they just start blowing up contracts and just, you know, figuring it out as they go?
Well, let me just tell you, without the roof, Nashville's still a yeah, but. Okay, so,
yeah,
we'd love to, but you don't have a roof. And we're not going there in late December, early January, and it's snow or it's 24 degrees. Guess what? Vegas has got a beautiful, beautiful new stadium. L.A.'s got a beautiful new stadium, and all that's enclosed, and so does Glendale, and so does Dallas, and so does all the other places. Houston, they've got beautiful state-of-the-art facilities with a roof. Elements are not in play. By the way, we can still go to New Orleans. They certainly host things. We got all kinds of options. So
right.
Well, Nashville will continue to be the yeah-but city. They'll continue to be the yeah-but city until they get a roof. So you can renovate it all you want, spend hundreds of millions of dollars. We'll still be the yeah-but when it comes to what we're talking about today.
Very, very true. We know that the traditional bowls are going to have a lot of the big games. The question is, when you have more games, more playoff games, are there some new venues that come into play? And can Nashville get in there despite the lack of facility that these other cities have?
I mean, they honestly, right now, they'd probably go to Minneapolis before they would come here because they've got a new state-of-the-art facility, new state-of-the-art building, and it's got a roof. Now, you can't do all the fun stuff maybe out in the streets that you could do in other markets when the weather's still nice in late December and early January. But I'm just saying we're on page four, man. Nashville's page four. We're not on page four of anything. But if you don't have a roof and you just want to make a nice little bar area, which is great, you know, and put this little outdoor patio, which is great, but you're not getting this event. We're also on page four.
We're talking about a tournament too. We're talking about a tournament where you're not going to know who's playing. You know, it's not like you can plan this out for several months. You don't know who the teams are.
Yeah.
And if you're quarterfinals, say, you got to wait and see who wins the first game. Those fans have got to figure out where they're going the next week. I just wonder from a practical standpoint what that does to the quote-unquote bowl games that know for several weeks. You know, they're used to, you know, the Rose Bowl, they get their teams December 10th, and they got until January 1st to plan it all out, and they do all their things. But Now it could be, let's see who wins between X and Y on Saturday, and then they're all coming here the next week. How many fans can turn that around quick enough? What does that do to ticket sales? There's a lot of questions that they've got to make sure that logistically they've got nailed down.
Well, it's become a little bit quieter here. The trucks are off the track. By the way, you know where you're going next, so go enjoy Carmel, Indiana, or close to it. Have a great weekend of baseball, and we'll talk to you when you get back.
All right, guys. Enjoy the weekend. It's going to be awesome. Excited for the city to get these events back. I mean, this is awesome. Think about it. We're mid-June now. It hasn't hardly slowed down at all like it has in past years. That's just the mark of a great sports city.
No doubt about it. And speaking of that, we'll come back and start hour number two with Kyle Petty. We do that next here on the DDC ESPN 102.5 The Game.